Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining Citizens Climate Lobby Climate Advocate Training. Before we get started, I wanted to acknowledge that each and every one of you are taking time away from your families, your friends, your hobbies to listen to this lesson and to work on something that's so much larger than ourselves. And for that, we're extremely grateful. We have two speakers for this webinar. My name is Amy Bennett, and I'm the Director of Congressional Liaisons and Lobby Days. I'm in North San Diego County. And also with us tonight is Brett Cease.
My name is Brett Cease. As Amy mentioned, I'm here in Lexington, Kentucky. I've been volunteering with CCL since 2011. I'm a volunteer education and engagement coordinator for CCL. So we're grateful for your attendance tonight. And just as a quick overview, if you haven't already, we're encouraging everyone to make sure to listen to that informational session, or even better, attend it live. You can find a recording of the call or register if you go to our main website. And then here, if you click on that magnifying glass, you can just type in informational session there or go to cclusa.org/intro, and you'll be able to see the whole training sequence of that call. Now, also on that call, what we covered is three specific things: the founding of Citizens Climate Lobby and its history, how CCL works to create political will, and how our fundamental perspective is that politicians respond to political will rather than creating it themselves. And then lastly, our legislative proposal, Carbon Fee and Dividend, a key element towards addressing climate change that meets the scale of the climate problem in the time frame that we need it to. So on this lesson, moving forward, what we're going to cover is six additional topics. You can see them all right here. First, we're going to have a deeper dive into our overall organizational structure and our values within Citizens Climate Lobby. Then we're going to talk about citizens that are creating political will, some specific case studies, as well as the tools that we use to really wrap our arms around this framework and generate effective political will throughout the country. We'll talk more in depth about our methodology, about a specific sequence of recommendations we have for planning our actual lobby meetings, and then we'll have a chance to do a deeper dive again into carbon fee and dividend to address a lot of common questions. All right. So with that overview, let's get started. I'm going to pass it back to you, Amy, to share more about our six core values and how they guide our staff and volunteers.
Well, we often talk about the CCL way of doing things, but what are Citizens Climate Lobby's values? As CCL is growing so quickly, it's key that all of our thousands of supporters are on the same page. Our values are something that we use to guide our decisions, how we respond to others. It's kind of like a home base that we know we can return to. CCL recognizes six core values that are essential to our identity: integrity, focus, optimism, relationships, personal power, and being nonpartisan. So let's explore each of these briefly.
Focus. Our focus is the single most impactful solution to climate change, a national carbon fee. We know it won't solve the problem entirely and appreciate the work that our friends and other groups are doing as well.
Relationships. We take the most generous approach possible: appreciation, gratitude, respect. We listen and work to find common values, and we endeavor to understand our own biases. We know that there's a place for protest, but our approach is to build consensus.
Optimism. We believe that people are good and that democracy works. We are confident that our approach will work because we see progress. And we're a community that offers one another comfort, support, and fun as we work.
Integrity. We're prepared and we do our research. We're always on time for meetings. Our approach is thoughtful and thorough. We consult experts and use data. We're open to new information. In fact, we solicit opposing opinions.
Personal power. This one's my favorite. We use our voices to be heard, and in this simple act, it transforms us from spectators to engaged citizens, and it reveals the true nature of democracy to each of us. We are volunteer-driven, trusting volunteers to make important decisions and to create and develop things that will be valued by Citizens Climate Lobby.
Being nonpartisan, we're open to all who are serious about solving climate change. You're welcome no matter where you live, what you wear, what you do for a living, or who you voted for in the last election. We work with elected officials and community leaders from across the political spectrum. We believe that everyone is a potential ally.
Thanks, Amy. So let's get started by talking about how CCL is organized. Citizens Climate Lobby is a volunteer-driven organization. You've already heard us say that a lot. And it's organized locally by the chapters. Now, we use the terms chapter or group interchangeably. They really mean the same thing. A group or chapter, regardless of what it's called, is really a local team that's creating political will and clear evidence that citizens support action on climate change within that congressional district or within that larger boundary. Citizens Climate Lobby has hundreds of groups across North America. They range from cities like New York City to Los Angeles to Toronto to Pocatello, Idaho, and Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We have chapters across Europe, Australia, Africa, Asia, and Central America. Each chapter has a group leader or a couple of co-leads that are essentially working on helping corral the interest within that chapter's area. Groups may be in varying stages of development. One group may have one person who is just getting the group started, and there are other more established groups that have dozens of members. If you're new to CCL and haven't hooked up with your local chapter, then you'll want to do so as soon as possible. In the U.S., in order to help you do that, we have divided our country into 10 different regions featured here on the map. Each region has a regional coordinator who supports the group leaders in each of these geographic areas. To find your local chapter and group leader, go to the main website and look for Chapters, our About tab. We encourage new volunteers to seek out their group leader's contact information and the call to introduce themselves to get really involved. Now, if you reach out to your local group leader and don't hear back, contact either Amy or myself. Our emails are listed right here, and sometimes emails go to spam. We can help you make introductions in this case, and if no organized group exists in your area, contact us via the email form provided, and we'll put you in touch with the folks closest to you.
One other role we should mention here is that of a congressional liaison. A CCL liaison is someone who is the representative for CCL when the group contacts a congressional staffer. Since there are 535 members of Congress, CCL's goal is to have a personal liaison for each one of those offices and their staff. The liaisons build ongoing relationships with their member of Congress and their staff by maintaining regular personal contact and by coordinating the group's meetings and communications with the office. This can be anything from sending a card when your member experiences a significant event, updating the office with timely resources related to climate change, or even inviting the staff to a local barbecue. We're working on a complex issue. Climate change. So having one consistent point of contact with the office of each member of Congress makes our process of communicating about climate change and our solution much more effective. The liaison is the representative for the CCL chapter, and the liaison has the goal of moving that member up the ladder of support for supporting carbon fee and dividend. And here's an important point of clarification. Even though we have liaisons, each CCL volunteer is encouraged to personally write or call their members of Congress and to do so frequently.
One last important point about our relationship with members of Congress and the confidentiality that we expect from our volunteers, and that's really this. It's essential that we don't repeat outside or share via notes or emails what we hear in our meetings. We leave it to the member of Congress, even if they're vocally enthusiastic, to make any public statements about climate change. The bottom line really is that whether it's seemingly a casual conversation about policy details or another private comment, it's critical to train ourselves to respect what's said in confidence. When we consistently demonstrate that we can be trusted in this way, that's what really opens the door for deeper conversations that move our member forward.
Connected to building those close relationships of trust, let's explore the CCL concept of looking for common ground, because finding common ground is the key to any long-term relationship, and long-term relationships are what CCL is all about. Building a long-term relationship with members of Congress and their staff are critical for our success. So here's the good news. We're absolutely convinced we can find some common ground with anyone. When we look for common ground, we start in three places. We look for shared values, we look for social connections, and we look at places that we care about. Regarding shared values, it can start on the most simple level. If you have kids, consider that most members of Congress have kids. They're concerned about their future as well. So during meeting introduction, mention your kids or grandkids.
You know, there's lots of other examples of shared values, including one's religious beliefs, general outlooks like a safe and prosperous future, energy independence or freedom of choice. And it's always productive to find out where that overlap is on common values. When you and a member of Congress or their staff find them, for example, sharing that same religion or attending the same school or having a similar priority for our country's future, make sure to keep emphasizing that connection in your interactions. Here's one example. So after years of building a relationship with a member of Congress, member of the Republican Party from Texas, here's what that member told one of our CCL groups about the common ground they'd found together. Look, we all agree that efforts to reduce emissions should work hand in hand with economic well-being, along with their confidence that the U.S. will continue to lead in emissions reductions by seeking cleaner air through American technology and innovation without sacrificing affordable energy and middle-class jobs. There's a lot to build off from that example. On social connections, we learn about the people we meet with in advance. For members of Congress, we find out about former jobs, schools, clubs, interests. You can do the same thing for aides as well. Now, one thing and one way to do this for anyone is just to, in the meeting, ask to have them tell you about themselves. This isn't just being polite. These are things that we actually really want to know. If there's a hometown or a college connection with somebody on our team or back home in our group, we really want to establish and nurture that connection. And that's really how you build any long-term relationship. Plus, it relaxes the people we meet with. It relaxes us. It gets them talking about themselves instead of us lecturing them. And lastly, as Amy mentioned, common ground can really also be built from literally a patch of ground on this earth, a place that we love or a member of Congress or their staff really cherishes. And we found that no matter who we talk to, people love their home community and this larger world passionately. So in a little bit, we'll jump into an exercise to get us all thinking about using our own story and experiences as a basis for that common ground. But first, Amy's actually going to share a specific story that highlights how one local CCL group began a relationship with their congresswoman and put this framework that we just discussed into action.
When Congresswoman Mia Love first met with CCL volunteers in her Utah district as a candidate for the House, she was not supportive of CCL's pitch. But CCLers were struck at her listening ability and her impressive job of steering the conversation to areas of agreement. Her love of running, her appreciation for the outdoors, trail access, and air quality. Over the next 6 months, the same local CCL volunteers began to build relationships with Representative Love's staffers, sharing their appreciation for the Congresswoman's work, stopping by to share constituent comments about climate action, inviting them to climate change-related events happening in the district, and even having them over for a potluck and getting to know them personally. When Representative Love held her first public town hall in the district, 8 CCL volunteers asked her questions on climate change. Even though during the meeting, Love deflected off the topic of climate change, the volunteers stuck around to stack chairs and to deepen their relationship with the staffers. And after everything was put away, they walked out with the Congresswoman herself, where she talked about wanting to work more with our group. The group continued to meet with the office regularly. They helped find experts both in the district and in Washington, D.C. that were trusted sources of information for their conservative representative. This encouraged Representative Love to host a town hall on the topic of climate change in order to learn more about it and to hear more from her constituents on this issue. The Utah town hall was positive, informative, solutions-oriented. At every step of the way, the group made it clear they wanted to work together with Representative Love. She shared that CCL's approach not only changed my mind about my involvement, but really changed my heart about what we should be doing.
I love that quote, and this is the true value of appreciation. We use it to begin our meetings or our letters to the editor, and it's not just a kickoff device. We work to keep appreciation in our mind throughout our interactions, and it's important because some people, believe it or not, will have a predisposed view of us, like we might of them. And so asking ourselves to appreciate anyone we encounter not only fundamentally changes their view of us, but it also takes that chip off of our own shoulder about who we might think that they are. It helps us remove our own biases and to see others as someone that we want to work with rather than as simply an obstacle to move around. And as Representative Love's example highlights, this approach puts us in a generous place that allows us to seek understanding and that common ground. And since then, Representative Love has not only joined the Climate Solutions Caucus and introduced House resolutions calling for the connection between climate change and the winter industry or the outdoor industry to be acknowledged, she's even begun to actively mail her own constituents to ask for their voice and input about climate change and highlight the importance of all members of Congress to take action to address it. You can see one of the mailers right here. And so this is our one rule. Treat everyone, even those who disagree with us, with respect, appreciation, and gratitude. And for a more full story on the evolution of Representative Love's transformation, go online to the Years of Living Dangerously webpage. You can click on the link to this slide as well and look for Laying the Groundwork for Love.
So to tie all of this first section up, let's do an exercise about finding common ground and developing your own story. To set this all up, here's a quote from E.B. White, the author of Charlotte's Web and Elements of Style, that gave an interview in the New York Times in 1969. Every morning, I wake up torn between a desire to save the world and an inclination to savor it. This makes it hard to plan the day. But if we forget to savor the world, what possible reason do we have for saving it? In a way, the savoring must come first. I think we can all identify with that. In the exercise that we'll be doing in just a minute, we'll ask you to identify a specific place that you love that's threatened to be negatively impacted by climate change. We're not talking generic types of places like the beach, nor do we mean to focus on a place that's threatened by other environmental factors like overdevelopment, toxic pollution, etc. But let's specifically key into how climate change is and will impact places we really care for. If it's your hometown and congressional district, all the better to help establish that common ground.
And the reason that we ask this is that social science research has shown that people connect much more strongly with their own backyard and concerns for their community than far-off impacts. So, think about what your place looks like and smells like, and using rich language to tell us about the place and how it feels to help us understand why you care for it. This exercise is a way to begin to develop a story that you can share with others. And essentially, stories and the use of descriptive metaphors are very powerful means of connecting with people. The more prepared we are to share our own and make personal connections, the more likely we are to find that common ground. They're also a way for us to humanize climate change rather than making it some abstract, far-off feeling concept. To make it part of our own stories and help those around us deepen their own concern for caretaking, given that not only this common ground we share is the natural world, but also preserving these places and these ways of life for future generations. All right, I'll give you a specific example from my own life, and then we're going to encourage you to really think about your own example to share, start writing it down and practicing it with those around you. The slide you see here catches the glimmering aurora borealis in the boundary waters of northern Minnesota, where I came into climate advocacy by way of 7 years of teaching outdoor education within that special holy wilderness. It's powerful to me to share the story of scientific studies detailing the progression of forests here. As the climate warms, the historic towering white pine conifers are projected to give way, if we continue on with business as usual emissions, to those of maple and other deciduous forests, even oak savanna, potentially disrupting the entire northern ecosystem and local guiding, hunting, fishing, and other tourist-based economies. But for the past 2 years, I've had the privilege of serving as regional coordinator for the Gulf Coast states while living in Dallas, Texas, and the chance to work with the most inspiring climate advocates I've ever met. It was here last summer that our Houston chapters witnessed the unimaginable deluge of more than 50 inches of record-breaking rain in their communities. Some of them were forced to move and forever lost their homes, treasured possessions like photo albums and family heirlooms, and dealt with the back-breaking effort of rebuilding unprecedented $100 billion in damages. The resolve of CCL Houston volunteers ever since has been fundamentally inspirational, hosting our regional conference, gaining the support of the mayor of Houston and other local officials on both sides of the aisle to support the Climate Solutions Caucus, and climate action to ensure our elected officials earnestly work together toward solutions that address the underlying cause behind so much pain, loss, and destruction. We'd like to ask you to continue to think about what you savor and be prepared to share it within your own meetings and your own interactions. Think about your connection to this special place and about how climate impact faces. If possible, tie in the potential impact on local economies that your community faces, reduced worker or agricultural productivity, extreme heat, drought, wildfires, inland flooding, disease vector expansion, seafood yield. There are so many ways that you can make your story personal and connected to common concerns for your other community members and uplift the importance of preserving our economic well-being and natural world. Being able to verbalize what you savor, as Amy said, or what you're for, really is a strong basis for more productive dialogue. If you're able to demonstrate to others that you share common ground and that you're for something, this is a powerful way of creating political will.
So, if we say our goal is to create political will, then we should clarify just what we mean. Think of political will as actions our chapters strategically take to demonstrate to Congress that the will of the people is to have a sustainable climate. So, what does that look like? Political will is really the clear demonstration of support back home in the district where any smart member of Congress will look to find whether it's worth sticking their neck out for a change in policy. Additionally, legislators need to know a specific actionable step, not simply that we want a sustainable climate and a strong economy. They want to hear what policies we want enacted so they can act on the people's will. That's precisely what we'll get to in just a moment, but first, a bit more on why we use the methodology we do.
Great. Thanks, Amy. So we organize people by congressional districts, which is what we found to be the most efficient way to meet with and demonstrate political will to Congress. And through our decade of organizing, we've learned from many others about what creates political will and what doesn't. And here's why that's important. We only ask CCL volunteers to do things that we know will have a very good chance of demonstrating the will of the people. And that's why we focus on them. We take actions that we know will be successful in helping have our members of Congress move in the direction of our legislation.
So what creates political will? We've organized our actions into five levers, and we call them the levers of political will. There's lobbying, media relations, grassroots outreach, grasstops outreach, and chapter development. We'll review each in depth next. So first, there's lobbying. Nothing's more impactful than citizens meeting frequently with their member of Congress or their staff. So we meet with them often in order to build a relationship of trust and show them that this legislation is something their constituents want and to educate them on how our proposal will impact their state or district. To create political will through lobbying, you can become a liaison or a co-liaison in your district or state. You can learn to effectively communicate and enhance your listening skills with CCL's Learning Center and attend a meeting with your member of Congress in Washington, D.C. or in your district. Lobbying is the most highly leveraged activity we can do. The second lever of political will is media. We work with both print and digital media in order to drive the conversation towards carbon fee and dividend. Creating political will through the media may include becoming a point person for a local newspaper to watch for opportunities for writing letters to the editor, writing letters to the editor and op-eds on your own, spreading stories and coverage across social media, or getting to know your editorial board and the key reporters at your state or local newspaper.
That third lever that creates political will is called grassroots outreach, and this means recruitment and education. We recruit and educate the public on climate solutions, on citizen advocacy, and really on how to participate in one's government. And some of the many opportunities that you'll see in the chance to have this grassroots outreach include tabling at local events and generating letters to Congress, training to become a public speaker or seeking out speaking engagements for another CCL member, and really organizing events that could be film screenings, other parties, fundraising efforts, you name it, throughout your own district to generate more enthusiasm and support on this issue. That fourth lever of political will is grasstops outreach, and this really means building relationships with and gaining the support of community leaders and non-governmental organizations on both the national and the local level. Some opportunities within grasstops outreach include really just identifying key experts and leaders in the community and then seeking their endorsement to really have the chance to advance influencing your member of Congress. You also want to have the chance to educate leaders about our proposal and how it will work. The great thing is, even if they don't immediately support fee and dividend or climate action, the chance just to sit down with them and educate leaders in your own community about the importance of climate action is an essential step as well. Finally, that last lever for political will building is developing your own chapter's growth. Developing your chapter at the grassroots level in terms of both numbers and skills is what really allows us to lobby more effectively, to generate more media, and to do outreach. And learning to develop and delegate within your chapter allows us to build more political will across all of the other levers. Some ways you could help here include helping organize the monthly meetings and helping the chapter communications, including invitations from phone calls, emails, and social media, and then also really inviting others to attend your meetings. We encourage you to do the things you're most comfortable with. Don't feel like you have to do it all. Pick one or two actions that you're most excited about to try out. And then, as you gain confidence, we always encourage you to push yourself into doing those things that you've always wanted to learn or grow into and expand that comfort zone.
Well, we haven't gone through all the opportunities for each of the levers in this lesson, but as a new volunteer, we encourage you to talk with your group leader about where you feel you can start offering your talents and energy and start jumping in. So to review, the levers for creating political will are lobbying, media, grassroots and grasstops outreach, and group or chapter development. Now, there may be times when you or your group experiences a lever that seems stuck. For example, you've met with your member of Congress several times and they agree that carbon fee and dividend is the best proposal. However, they won't support the proposal until there's support from primary voters in the businesses in the district. In this example, to demonstrate the support that the member of Congress needs, it makes sense to ramp up your outreach to business or community leaders and also to grow your group.
What we're trying to do together is not going to be easy, but citizens who are passionate, who are well-trained, who are organized by congressional district, and who have a good system of support can more than influence the process, history has shown. And what sets Citizens Climate Lobby apart from other organizations is this. We are working on building positive relationships with our community and with members of Congress in order to create that political space that allows these members of Congress to move in the direction that we want. So let's hearken back to a history lesson. When we talk about building a relationship, what does that look like? Let's start with an example about Gandhi and a man by the name of General Jan Smuts. Many of you may know the story of Mahatma Gandhi's efforts to convince the British to end their colonial rule. So the story goes that when they met, Gandhi quietly walked up to the general and told him this, of India. But before that time, Gandhi fought for the rights of Indians in South Africa. And this brought him straight into contact with the head of the Transvaal government, General Jan Smuts. I've come to tell you that I oppose your government. And laughing, the towering 6'2" Smuts sneered down and said, "Oh, really? And do you have anything else to tell me?" Without missing a beat, Gandhi responded, "Yes, I'm going to prevail." And to this, Smuts was astonished, asking, "And how do you intend to do that?" And Gandhi smiled and replied simply by saying, "With your help." Years later, Smuts admitted that this is exactly what had happened. He wrote in his own journal, "Gandhi appealed to what was best and most noble in me." In his journal as well, Smuts wrote, "Gandhi never forgot the human background of the situation. He never lost his temper or succumbed to hate and preserved his gentle humor even in the most trying situations. His manner and spirit, even then as well as later, contrasted markedly with the ruthless and brutal forcefulness which is in vogue for our day." Now, I have to admit, when I first heard this story, I felt it was pretty far-fetched. But this is exactly what's at the heart of our own methodology in CCL. Using genuine respect and appreciation to see that best in the other person and doing a little bit of mental jujitsu, if you will even, to find common ground and invite them into solving the problem alongside of you. Gandhi sought to build a relationship with General Smuts, and in turn, this approach led to substantial results. As we work to build relationships with people, we are empowered in the process. And this is because it connects us on a personal level with whomever we're communicating, whether it's in a face-to-face meeting, in a written letter to the editor, or in an op-ed.
Let's step back for a little bit to connect with how Gandhi's example ties with CCL's larger mission and purpose. Many people are familiar with our vision to create the political will for a livable world. However, I think there's a little less awareness about CCL's equally critical purpose organizationally. We strive to enable individual breakthroughs in the exercise of personal and political power. What does that mean to experience a breakthrough in exercising one's own power? Well, we've all had experiences in life where we discovered a newfound source of strength and inner ability to realize that through our own active participation in a cause, we could make a difference. One powerful example of an individual experiencing breakthroughs that encapsulates the very heart of personal transformation that CCL seeks to provide is Piper. Piper's a 16-year-old high school student who attended the CCL National Conference in June this past year and was so inspired by the empowerment she experienced, she wrote the following to Mark Reynolds, our executive director. "Honestly, I have no idea where to begin my gratitude for CCL. Never have I found an organization that gave me such confidence that I can change the world. Before, I viewed Congress as a bickering political dead end. I was so inspired by these positive interactions between our lobbyists and the staffers that I'm now considering running for office someday so that I can foster more bipartisan cooperation in politics. At the conference, I was treated as though my age and unique point of view was actually an asset for the organization." So Piper's experience of personal empowerment is at the very heart of everything that our organization strives to provide for all of our volunteers. Since then, Piper's continued to lead with her voice for climate advocacy, and she's even given a TEDx talk on her experiences. As one final distinction about what we mean when we say empowerment, I think it's helpful to reflect on the words of Charles Reich in his book, Power and the Law. As a legal scholar deeply involved in policymaking for decades, Reich explains that when you reach out to another person through the energy or creativity that is within you, and the other person responds, you're exercising power. When you make somebody else do something against their will, to me, that's not power at all. That is force, and force to me is a negation of power. I think Reich's words are a helpful window into the importance of why CCL communicates from a different frame. Because this experience of personal breakthroughs with empowerment is at the real core of our organization, we'd like to make sure to take a minute to invite you all to reflect back in your own lives on a time when you've experienced such a breakthrough. It could be a story of when you were empowered by a parent or a role model or a boss or someone you just happened to meet. So I want to give you one example of something that happened to me at a local city council meeting. In our neighborhood, we had a big road that was being improved and widened, and for quite a few months, we had cut through traffic through our residential area, cars trying to avoid the traffic. So we went to a city council meeting, our local neighbors, and I sat next to our PTA president, Mary. And the council asked, well, what should we do about this problem? And I whispered in Mary's ear, we should put up a roadblock on Puebla Street. And Mary just shot right up and said, we should put a roadblock on Puebla Street. And sure enough, within a few weeks, that roadblock was up. I think we've, if not saved a few lives, at least some broken bones. So we encourage you to think about examples of your own personal empowerment.
So let's talk about Laser Talks really quick. A Laser Talk is a bite-sized advocacy resource that's at the heart of how we learn to be effective advocates. Each talk is brief and it focuses on one aspect of our issue. You know, we take putting the time into practice them seriously. And the great news is that CCL has dozens of these bite-sized laser talks available on our website. If you scroll to the bottom of our homepage, as this slide shows, or if you just search in the bar for laser talks right up here, you can find all of our laser talks on our main website, and they may very well answer a question that you have about anything from energy policy to economics and small and easy to understand language. We take time as an organization to practice and really have the chance to be prepared when the opportunity presents itself, on both alone and in groups at our monthly meetings, to continue to hone our craft and practice them to the point where we can speak them without really even thinking. We really internalize the main message. This will help in writing letters to the editor or op-eds and in talking with politicians or even when you talk with your Uncle Vernon, who might be skeptical about climate change. And through intentional practice, you might find that even more quickly than you expect, you'll soon be comfortable and conversant if someone asks you about a wide range of issues that relate to global warming. And so let's practice one of the most common laser talks we have together. I'll demonstrate it, and please feel free to read out loud with me in your own home. So our carbon fee and dividend proposal works like this. A fee is placed on fossil fuels at this source. It starts small at $15 per ton of carbon dioxide emitted and increases by $10 per ton each year. The net revenues are then returned to all American households, two-thirds of which would break even or even receive more in their dividend checks than they're currently paying in higher energy prices. This price sends a clear market signal, which will unleash entrepreneurs and investors in the clean energy economy. Thanks for reading out loud. And now, Amy will review our methodology.
Thank you, Brett. Let's put this all together. How does showing respect and appreciation, looking for the best in others, and being for something, and finding common ground help us to build relationships? Here's a final powerful case study of building a relationship with members of Congress that's led to political will that's been profiled in national media, including a piece in the New York Times last year. Here's a photo of Jay Butera. Jay's worked to address climate change for more than a decade, and he's been a volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby since 2012. In 2013, he met Representative Ted Deutsch, a Florida Democrat, whose district was experiencing the effects of global warming. Jay mentioned he had a vision to create a bipartisan caucus in the House that would focus on climate solutions. Deutsch liked the idea and agreed to work with him and Citizens Climate Lobby towards that goal.
So Jay started visiting offices on Capitol Hill in an effort to get Republicans and Democrats to sit down together. And at the time, he admits, it felt like a fool's errand. People would laugh and say, good luck with that. And the word climate even felt unmentionable. But nevertheless, Jay and Deutsch devised a two-by-two approach. The caucus would grow by twos to keep equality of numbers between Republicans and Democrats participating. Many Democrats were interested, and the question really was, how to get Republicans to join? Jay reasoned that the first movers were likely to come from Florida. The coastal districts, he said, are mainly Republican, and the coastline there is threatened existentially by climate impacts already.
Jay flew to Miami. He attended events in the southern Florida area that focused on climate change. And there he met locals and helped them start a Citizens Climate Lobby chapter. Jay said, I saw that local mayors and county leaders were dealing with the impacts of climate change head on. Some towns had raised the roads and moved wells miles inland to escape seawater intrusion. In other places, seawater poured into the streets at every high tide. Jay discovered that Congress members in Washington were disconnected with the reality on the ground.
And so for the next 2 years, Jay and many other volunteers worked together to address that disconnect. They reached out to over 55 local leaders, including mayors, county commissioners, presidents of chambers of commerce, state legislators, and university presidents all across South Florida, most of them from Republican-held congressional districts, and asked them to sign a letter asking Congress to specifically take action on climate change. It made a difference. It led directly to the formation of a Republican-introduced House resolution that's been reintroduced in this session, as well as highlighting that Republicans can and must take meaningful and responsible action on climate change. Additionally, one of those first Republicans to step forward for the Republican climate resolution was that of Representative Carlos Curbelo. He joined Representative Deutsch, and in February 2016, as co-chairs, they formed the first ever bipartisan climate solutions caucus, a bipartisan group in the U.S. House of Representatives, which will explore policy options that address the impacts, causes, and challenges of our changing climate.
And today, the caucus has 74 members, 37 from each party, and it'll continue to serve as an organization that educates members on economically viable options to reduce our climate risk. CCL's played an integral role in building up the membership of this caucus, but it works independently and as an overall body does not explicitly endorse carbon fee and dividend, Representative Carlos Curbelo of Florida, Republican co-founder of the Climate Caucus, said CCL's commitment to kindness and respect is certainly a direct factor in persuading Republicans to join the group. What Jay and the rest of Floridians did is a perfect example of how demonstrating respect and appreciation for others, even those who we think oppose us, finding common ground and building relationships leads to political will. They met with their congressional members and appealed to the best in them. They created political will locally that allowed these members of Congress to respond to it. Their approach is all constructive all the time, said Representative Curbelo in an E&E News recent interview. They're not just advancing the cause of sound environmental policy, Curbelo said. They're also contributing to improving the nature of politics in this country, which is sorely needed. Now that we've reviewed some of these case studies, Brett's going to talk about what this actually looks like on an individual level. How do we plan for a meeting with a member of Congress?
This really is a great time to promote that all of what we've been reviewing today is available in CCL Community. The website is just simply community.citizensclimatelobby.org. You can see it on the slide here. And to find these materials that I'm highlighting and we're about to go over in the meeting planning, just go to the Take Action Center and then follow the pathway to lobby Congress. Even though no two meetings are the same, the basic outline follows a general form. Prior to that meeting, what you want to do is start by doing research on your member and your district. Learn what they're really proud of, what they like, what they've accomplished, what annoys them, so you make sure not to bring that up, as well as the local impacts of climate change on your district and how fee and dividend will help address them. Review previous meeting minutes and determine ahead of time who's going to be responsible for doing the follow-up. You also want to make sure to assign specific roles within your actual meeting, that of the meeting leader, the timekeeper, the note taker, and the person that leaves behind our ask.
We meet in teams of 4 to 6 members. Our basic meeting outline goes like this. We thank the member or the staffer for meeting with us. The timekeeper asks, how much time do you have for this meeting? We introduce ourselves very briefly, and if we're meeting with a staffer, we might ask them to tell us a bit about themselves. We show appreciation for something they've done recently that you sincerely appreciate. It doesn't have to be about climate or the environment. Then we explain our purpose to create the political will for a livable world. We briefly state our request, which is to support or introduce legislation that puts a fee on carbon-based fuels and returns the net revenue to American households. Then we mention that we have more to say on that, but first we'd like to discuss your concerns. Then there's the listening and discussion part of the meeting. Here are possible questions you might ask to further the discussion, but be flexible based on your relationship. For instance, rather than react to their answer, it's most important to help them feel heard. So you might ask, what might be preventing you or the representative from supporting our legislation? Who in our district would we need to convince about the merits of our proposal to win your support? What's your preferred plan to lower emissions? Having done your research, you're probably going to be able to anticipate what you think their responses might be.
Those are excellent questions, Amy. And really, finally, what we do is deliver our ask, and if they've already indicated that they're not yet ready to support or introduce our policy, we want to make sure to introduce a secondary request or a kind of supporting ask, if you will, as a building block. We have these exchanges, we think through all of these different asks that we have come prepared to talk about, and then we essentially want to offer additional materials. We want to find out if they want them in hard copy or electronically, and how often and when do they like us to follow up. We always love knowing who they work with across the aisle, and we also want to make sure to ask any other remaining questions that we'd like to know about what we can be doing more of in the district, as Amy mentioned. At the end, we thank them for their time, and that's really the overview of how we conduct a meeting with the congressional office. Now, though we don't have time tonight to actually have us practice this on a webinar, we do encourage everyone to seek this out with their local group and also look in Citizens Climate Lobby University's 301 and 401 lessons so you can see what this outline actually looks like in person. In action, as teams should really practice these points with a couple of run-throughs prior to an actual meeting. Now, we'd also like to just quickly put out a notice to our action teams. These teams are organized by volunteers across specific topics. You can see the full variety here, from energy to ocean impacts, agriculture to higher education. And all of them are working and strategizing on ways that move our areas forward, each of these focuses, towards supporting fee and dividend. Most of our action teams usually meet a monthly, phone call and are doing some of our most important work. And they're always looking for new volunteers to help make a difference and make that impact, especially if you are coming into CCL with a wealth of experience or passion from a particular sector. We'd really love to encourage you to share.
We have one more thing to cover, and that's CCL's legislative proposal. It's called Carbon Fee and Dividend. You've heard us say that Citizens Climate Lobby is betting the farm on a market-based solution. What exactly does that mean? Let's start with a quick review of where we are today. The price we consumers pay for fossil fuels is artificially low, and that's due to several factors. Before production, fossil fuel producers receive discounted leases on public lands and offshore. During production, fossil fuel producers receive subsidies, special tax breaks, and eminent domain for pipelines. After production, the price we pay for fossil fuel doesn't include some of the hidden costs. These hidden costs are known as externalities by economists, and some of them include military. The U.S. military has spent trillions protecting energy supply lines across the world. On health, the use of coal alone increases healthcare costs $300 to $500 billion a year. And of course, there are climate costs associated with adapting to and mitigating the effects of a changing climate system.
So if the market price for any product, not just fossil fuels, doesn't include its real costs, economists have a word for that, and they call that a market failure. And global warming has been called by some as the greatest market failure in the history of capitalism. Economists say that the best first step to correcting a market failure, then, is to hold a product accountable for its costs. With fossil fuels, what this means is moving those hidden costs that Amy discussed, from the military expenditures, increased healthcare costs, environmental damages, back onto the balance sheet of the fossil fuel producer. Now, the idea of putting a price on carbon is simple. We add to the cost of doing business in those resources because we want to reveal the hidden cost that no one is currently taking responsibility for. Getting that price right means making the market tell the truth. It transforms our whole economy to move in the right direction and means ordinary people like you and me, consumers, small business owners, taxpayers, we all recover that market leverage that we're supposed to have to determine whether or not we do something that's too costly. In Citizens Climate Lobby, we emphasize that with all those costs fully accounted for, then we let fossil fuels compete with any other form of energy in the marketplace. And when consumers realize the true cost of burning fossil fuels, they'll make a more informed and better decision, leading us to a clean energy economy. And now I'll pass it to you, Amy, to review several policy options available to manage carbon and other greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, there are really four basic options that are important to understand and to understand the differences between them. It's also important to note that each of these options will work. However, each one varies in terms of the levels of enforcements, the costs, and the winners and the losers from those policies. First, there's regulation. Straight regulation has been the most heavily used way to tackle our emissions reductions. It's been historically prevalent because we want to see a negative impact from routine behavior. It's been logical when that happens for some public authority to take action to make sure that activity doesn't harm others. In the strict regulatory scenario, you need people with salaries monitoring the behaviors of emitters. This tends to get expensive, as evidenced by the current administration. It can be undercut by underfunding. And overall, it's most useful where less intrusive options are not available or just don't work. Second, there's cap and trade. That sets a cap for total emissions, then sells the permits for the right to pollute up to that cap. And it allows for the trading of permits. This approach is what Congress voted on in the House and approved back in 2009, but the Senate never approved. Cap and trade creates regulation enforced by the trading of artificial assets, the permits. Now, it can help reduce emissions, but it's also complex. It creates uncertainty or volatility in the marketplace and requires new regulatory mechanisms, both for the cap and for the trading market. And it's usually narrower in scope than a more straightforward carbon tax.
Like we mentioned earlier, taxes begin to account for the cost of something that generates hidden costs. So another option is having a carbon tax, because that tax then would eliminate market distortions and allow enterprise to go to work. Instead of requiring regulation to get bad behavior under control, what a carbon tax does is operate under the assumption that if consumers understand the true costs, then the harm will be eliminated by putting economic pressure on suppliers to reduce that harm. You can think about examples from cigarettes or alcohol. Now, one challenge, though, with a straight-up carbon tax is that it's designed to pressure consumers to reduce consumption, which can then constrain overall economic activity. And to understand this, the Congressional Budget Office has looked at some carbon taxes before. And what they've said is that they are a drag on the economy. A $10 per ton tax on carbon dioxide would do the following. It would raise about $55 billion in federal revenue. It would raise gas prices about 10 cents a gallon, raise electricity prices about a penny per kilowatt hour, slow job and GDP growth, and cut carbon dioxide emissions very little. Overall, what's clear from this analysis is that a poorly designed carbon tax can have a negative impact on the economy. And that's where CCL's carbon fee and dividend policy comes in. Because essentially, there's a final option available that we're advocating for that addresses these concerns. To overcome the constraint on economic activity that would come as a result of a straight-up carbon tax and reduce the harm that's caused by the burning of fossil fuels throughout the world, CCL proposes carbon fee and dividend. Okay, first, carbon fee and dividend places a steadily rising fee on all carbon-emitting fuels as upstream as possible. At the source, you know, the wellhead, mine, port of entry, the pipeline, wherever they're first introduced into the economy. This greatly minimizes the administration needed to assess such a fee. It would start again at $15 per ton a year and increase $10 annually. This annual increase rate is also key because the CBO model we just talked about shows negligible impacts or emissions if it's just a one-off rate level of that $10 per ton. It also promotes a strong market signal for decades to unlock both American innovation that's needed to switch to low carbon directions, as well as generate that significant investment needed to make the switch. That second leg of the stool is returning all of the revenues back to households minus the administration costs in a monthly dividend check, with half shares to children up to 2 per household. The dividend return would be simple to administer and is estimated to protect 2/3 of consumers from rising energy costs and related cost of good increases. This protection is key because CCL has roots in social justice concerns from our founder's decades of work with microcredit loans, and early on when he and other leaders brainstormed what was the most effective first step in addressing our climate concerns. We were acutely aware of the need to protect lower-income families from any temporarily rising energy costs that such a transition might create. And that dividend return is also a key difference compared to the CBO estimate. Such a carbon tax with no return constrains the economy, while a revenue-neutral approach like fee and dividend both unleashes economic growth while protecting working and middle-class families from rising energy costs. And as we discussed in the informational session, we propose a border adjustment so that goods produced in the U.S. are treated the same as goods produced in foreign countries. Getting that border adjustment right is important because it ensures domestic manufacturers have no incentive to move operations to a country that doesn't have an equivalent price on carbon, and that if other countries want to keep using dirty manufacturing processes, they'll have to pay the American people for that privilege. Our legal trade law team also assures us that there are, in fact, two separate provisions that make it clear carbon fee and dividend would be compliant within the WTO framework.
So in quick review, fee and dividend requires no new spending, no new bureaucracy, no new regulation, and it allows the the Main Street economy to keep chugging along and even expand while sending a direct price signal to investors that the smart path forward for future investment is moving to a low-carbon energy supply. A clean fee and dividend program allows even the energy sector to transition investments cost-effectively, so we see economic gain, not harm. I should point out that revenue neutrality, returning the net revenues to American households, is also politically important. We desperately need Republican leadership on climate. Most Republican members of Congress signed a pledge not to support any net tax increase. Politically, revenue neutrality means Republicans can vote for CCL's fee without violating their pledge.
So what would the Congressional Budget Office's economic analysis of carbon fee and dividend look like? Well, we don't know because they haven't scored it yet, but from our own revenue report, we see that all of their yardsticks would flip from negative to positive. Chosen for its track record of providing analysis to both governmental bodies as well as large corporations, REMI's analysis concluded that instead of being a drag on the economy, such a system would actually have strong, positive economic effects on the nation's health and prosperity alike. For example, instead of slowing job growth would actually grow faster. You can see that at a projected rate over 20 years, CCL's proposal would generate an additional 2.8 million American jobs. Over 20 years, an additional $1.3 trillion of GDP growth would occur. And no matter how high the carbon fee goes, most consumers would see no net increase in their energy costs. And that's because the monthly dividend check covers, or more than covers, all rising energy costs, including direct costs like gas and electricity, as well as indirect energy costs needed to produce those goods and services. Finally, carbon fee and dividend, instead of generating modest carbon dioxide emission reductions, within 20 years of being implemented, would slash those emissions in half. In other words, CCL's solution matches the scale and the timing of the challenge we face, putting us on a path to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions by 80 to 90% based on 1990 levels within mid-century. So to conclude, Mark Twain said, "The difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug." And tonight's takeaway is this: there's a big difference between a carbon tax and a revenue neutral carbon fee and dividend.
So you've completed our Climate Advocate Training webinar. If you've participated in the informational session as well, congratulations, you're complete with our training module. Have you joined Citizens Climate Lobby Community, our sister website on the internet for CCL members? If not, you can register and log in at community.citizensclimatelobby.org. Sarah at our headquarters will send you a login and a password within several days.
You also want to make sure to check in with the group nearest to you. Email Sarah Wanis, our membership coordinator, at membership@citizensclimate.org, and she can help you find your group and the local group leader's email address.
If there's no group near you, Sarah will provide you with the state or regional coordinator's email address. And if you didn't hear back from Sarah or a group leader, contact Brett or I, because things can end up in spam, and we can help you if you think that's the case. Our contact information is amy@citizensclimate.org and brett@citizensclimate.org.
Also, if you're interested in continuing in this learning process with CCL, we host a weekly core volunteer training. It's a series of 12 rotating lessons. They're held on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, and each lesson drills down into a specific topic, such as writing a letter to the editor, or how to use social media effectively as a climate advocate, storytelling, climate science, you name it. How you can connect these themes to take your climate leadership to the next level with CCL. We're growing by leaps and bounds, and our goal is to support you in this important work. So contact us if you need help, and we'll do our best to help you or direct you with someone who can. To close tonight, here are the inspiring words of Frances Hodgkins Burnett. "At first, people refuse to believe that a strange new thing can be done. And then they begin to hope it can be done. And then they see it can be done, and then it is done, and all the world wonders why it was not done so long before." After so many years, CCL believes that we in the climate movement may be about to encounter people seeing that it finally can be done. Thank you for joining us in this movement, and we look forward to continuing to work together to build the political will for a livable world. Have a great night.